Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Jumping Monkeys would like to thank CashFly for the bandwidth for this podcast. CACHEFLY.com. CashFly. This is Jumping Monkeys with Megan Maroney and Leo Laporte. Episode 38 for March 15th, 2008. Archivist Allison. Jumping Monkeys is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook and a whole lot more, visit audible.com/monkeys. It's time for Jumping Monkeys. Hello, Megan Maroney.
Hello. Do you know what today is?
What day is today?
It's March 15th, the Ides of March.
Okay. Does that mean Caesar's going to get killed?
It means it's my birthday.
What?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You didn't tell me that.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
That's right, because Abby's a week after you.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's exciting. What are you doing for your birthday?
Going out to dinner, but I can't decide where.
You're going to go in Petaluma? Or?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe Sonoma. Who knows?
I love Central Market.
Yeah, I know. I do too. But sometimes I feel like it's more expensive than what it's worth.
It's very pricey. Reese BC?
Oh,
You're not crazy about them?
No,
I love that. Get the short ribs with the pappardelle noodles.
Yeah, we
homemade.
Went there for Christmas Eve 2 years ago with my nephews and my kids, and it was just horrible.
Well, really?
Well, the food was good and the service was good, but taking, 2 year olds
on
Christmas Eve.
Oh, so you're not allowed in there again.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of. Yeah. No, we are allowed there. Actually, my parents watched the boys and took them to Mi Pueblo, the Mexican restaurant.
Also great.
And
they're opening a new restaurant downtown,
yeah,
like Kentucky.
When we came home, they said, "You might not want to go to Mi Pueblo for a few weeks."
Oh, that's bad. And Mexican restaurants are very family friendly. The first restaurant we ever brought Abby to when she was probably 6 weeks old it's called Mom is Cooking in San Francisco, and it's one of the best restaurants in the world. Speaking of which, I think you should go to the best restaurant in the world, which happens to be just down the road from here.
Which is?
The French Laundry.
Oh, yeah.
Hubert Keller's amazing.
We would have had to make
reservations
a few years ago.
No, you know what's interesting about them? That you can only make reservations 1 month ahead of time.
Oh.
So the 30 days before when you're going to make the reservation, like you would have had to call February 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is you got to do it on auto dial because they fill up right away.
Yeah.
So I guess it is too
late. I don't know. We might go to San Francisco.
Good. That would be fun. Hey, Marco did something really cool.
What did he do?
I just wanted to mention this. He donated. We had the school auction a couple I think it was about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
Big night out, they call it. It was a big fundraiser for the school, and they really needed the money this year because there was a shortfall. He donated a Italian Christmas dinner for up to 14 people, which is so nice of him. He valued it at, $275, something like that.
I think they valued it. I don't know.
He's going to do all the cooking. He's going to do all the shopping. He's going to make some incredible Italian turkey. It's a Thanksgiving dinner, not a Christmas dinner.
Yeah, but he's not making Italian turkey. He's making, he's going to make pasta
Italian
and pesto
style.
And but.
Went for,
didn't tell me what it, he didn't ask and they didn't ever
I know
him.
What it went for.
What did it go for?
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
$2,500.
Wow.
So he raised a lot of money. Very generous.
Yeah.
He's a teacher at the school.
Yeah. Someone else volunteered to pay for everything. He's just doing the cooking. And
isn't that great?
Yeah. You still think he's generous even though he's not paying?
Are you kidding? He's going to wash the dishes. I think you might be
he's
too.
He's going to wash. Yeah. I'll be there.
I have a feeling.
Did you bid on it?
I did.
You did?
But when it got to that price, it was like, okay. Because it was in the live auction.
Right.
And so we raised our paddle a few times, but that's what happens sometimes at these auctions. People get excited. People get very anxious to get this
especially
thing.
Especially when
somebody
they've been drinking, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's key. My wife was on the committee that organized this. She made sure there was it was New Orleans. It was Big Easy night out. So there were hurricanes and Sazeracs and mint juleps. And all those New Orleans drinks.
All right. So today we are going to talk to Allison Langmead, who is an archivist, but or an Archivist? I'm not sure I'm pronouncing.
Archivist.
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 I think you pronounce it archivist. Allison has her PhD from Columbia and then went back to get her master's in library and information science from UCLA.
Wow.
And she...
She's super smart.
Right. And she has a new baby. She's a new mom. Aww. So she's taking her experience in the workplace and kind of... you know, seeing how it applies to our own records of our kids' pictures and videos.
So like organizing
and stuff.
The stuff that you save from your, like schoolwork and report cards. And
right.
Wow.
And so she has some interesting ideas and I'm really looking forward to talking to her because I just feel like I'm overwhelmed with, I take millions of pictures, but I don't do anything with them. I have video from since, you know, Annabella's birth and I don't do anything with it. And
we still have the video of our wedding 20 years ago.
Yeah. Mine's on a VCR.
And yeah, I don't, VHS. Yeah,
VHS.
I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah, so I don't know what to do with it either. Mm. Yeah, so hopefully
that's
she can
something
help
we can
us with
ask
that.
Her about. What do you do? Because even if you have it on digital media, the media is always changing. What are you going to do then?
Yeah,
I mean, a VHS tape was, you know, I mean, pretty soon you won't be able to buy anything that could play it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And heaven forfend, you put it on an HD DVD, you'd be really in trouble.
Yeah.
just kidding. That's a geek joke. So she'll be fun. That's coming up.
All right. So I wanted to mention that people could call us.
We love getting the voicemails.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 707-981-4602.
You could also email Megan with an audio clip if you want to, you know, make it yourself, make it sound better.
Right. Yeah. So that's megan@twit.tv and we can play that. And so this is not a toll free number, but
did you do a poll?
We're going to do a poll today. We don't do one every episode. I like to just, you know, spring it on you.
Do you have any results?
I've got no poll results. We gave all our poll results away.
We're done. So we need a new poll.
Yeah, we need a new poll. Now, there's an article recently in the New York Times by Brad Stone, who I think you've interviewed before.
Brad's been on Twit, yeah.
He's the one that uncovered fake Steve Jobs, right?
Yep.
And he has twins. And he wrote this article, The Modern Nursery, No Batteries Required.
Oh,
and it's
thank
got
goodness.
Some gadgets that we have talked about, that It's Been timer, where you say, you know, you write in how long it's been since your child ate or pooped or slept or, you know, all that kind of thing.
That's so you hand it when you do the handoff. They know, the person, your next caretaker knows, your husband or your whoever's taking care of the kids.
So there's this one gadget that he talks about at the end.
The Clean Nas nasal aspirator?
No.
Bay sounds at Babytronics?
No.
No. What could it be?
It's this device that you put in, it comes with like little outfits that you put in the outfit and it measures how much you've talked to your child during the day. But they say, you know, the more you talk to your child, the better you're teaching them to speak and, you know, learn and be smart.
It's called Lena.
Yeah. So it's a little device. You plug it into your computer at the end of the day and it says how much you've talked to your child during the day. I found this incredibly strange.
By the way, $400.
Well, what is it worth to you how much you talk to your child?
What does it mean how much you talk to your child?
Well, the more you talk, the better. But I just think that that's bizarre. And I just wanted to ask,
how does it know it's you and not your baby?
I think that's why it costs $400. I'm guessing it can tell the difference between you and your...
Who the heck thought this up?
No. But I just wanted to ask, would you use a gadget that records how much you talk to your child? Now, of course, we've biased, but the answers are either yes or no. I don't know. It's interesting because there's a woman that really, that he talked to.
You're talking to the kid and not on the phone?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess because when you talk to a kid, I think you have a certain tone. You know, you like
so
I wouldn't
tell.
Talk to my probably again. I'm guessing that's why it costs $400. But
well, let's assume for the purposes of the poll, let's assume that there were such a device that it could actually tell the difference.
Are you doubting Brad Stone? Because he didn't actually use this because this was one of the devices that his kids are only like 4 months old or something. So that's too.
Well, no,
young.
That's when you need to use it. Right?
Maybe his kids are 2 months
old. Are they talking about teenagers?
No, you're talking about really young, yeah. So
it says, this is the website. Are you concerned about language delays, autism, or transitioning an adopted child? Oh, this is guilt factor.
Yeah, it really is the guilt factor.
Empowering parents by automatically measuring and analyzing your child's language development so you can conquer language delay.
Interesting.
Do you think language delay, if there be such a term, has anything to do with how much you talk to your kid?
I think scientists have said that it's pretty important, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, they
what
say
do you mean
that
talk like,
well,
how was your day? Do you have a good day? Is that poop in your diaper? What's going on? What do you... Yeah, or you go, hey, dipo, dipo, dipo.
I think real words is what they're talking about.
Oh, see, we never did that.
I'm not sure that I believe in that, because they say twins have language delay, because you're just there's no way you're able to talk to them as much as one child, because there's two of them.
Right.
But my kids did not have...
Are Milo and Huck talking already?
Yeah.
How old are
they?
They're
almost not ever not talking. They'll be three next month.
They talk a lot.
Yeah. They say a lot. They say bizarre things too. Like, look at this rock. Isn't it remarkable?
You're kidding.
No, they said that the other day.
Isn't it remarkable?
Yeah. They're weird.
You should ask them about Star Wars.
Yeah, I should. But, so yeah.
Okay.
Would you use a gadget that records how much you talk to your child? A, yes. B, no.
Well, now you know. I mean, that this is such a thing.
Some people might use it, and this poll will tell us that we're crazy, saying
right.
that it's...
And you can call and leave a message, too, and explain why we're crazy.
Right. So let's get to the spend, save, give now.
I love spending.
Each week, we talk about spending, saving, and giving away. This first is a toy that I just love that I had to share. The stacking robots. Have you seen those? Did you have these? We have actually stacking clowns, which I couldn't find. These were a hand-me-down toy.
I'd rather have robots.
our clowns really scarier than robots? That would have been a good poll. What's scarier, clowns or robots?
Okay, can we have two polls in one day?
Yes,
okay.
Clowns or robots, I'm writing it down.
Which is scarier, a clown or a robot?
Okay. They're really cool because they're like better than blocks. You can stack them all different ways and teach kids about balance. And my kids love them. And
this is cool.
Yeah, and we had... At Thanksgiving, when we were playing with them, my, 9-year-old nephew really liked it. My cousin, who's...
How many do you get? Is it a pretty big set?
Yeah, it's I don't know how many, does it say? But it's all those that you can see at the
Schilling,
site.
And Schilling actually makes some of the really coolest, funnest kid toys,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, they have good toys.
I like their stuff. Let me see here. It says... includes 9 multicolored robots at interlink. That's not very many. They're 3.5 inches tall.
How much is it?
But it's only $13.
Yeah.
So you could get like 2 sets.
Right. Yeah, I get 2 sets of stacking robots. I think the clowns come with more than 9, but maybe not.
9's not very many.
Yeah.
I want more.
More robots. Okay. The next link I have is the save. This is from Rookie Moms.
Wait a minute. Now you can also get... clowns. Ah, there.
Oh, you
are.
Can? You saw the clowns?
Yeah, that's from a different... Is that what you... Do these look like your clowns?
Except for ours are just brown.
Ooh,
they're not all colored like
scary
that.
Scary clowns.
This is scary.
Scary clown.
Those don't look like ours.
These are terrifying. These are from Bill Ding. Wait a minute. Let's see how...
Who's Bill Ding? Bill Ding. I get it.
Get it?
Oh, Bill.
Bill Ding. Doesn't say how many, whatever those are, scary things you get. But it's probably, it's the same price. So it's probably you also get 9.
Huh.
Huh. Or you can get them both together.
Ooh, and clowns and robots and have them.
Mix them.
Yeah.
Mix and match. They might breed.
Yeah. All right, moving on.
Scary animals.
I'm moving on.
All right, sorry.
Ooh, scary animal stacking.
I have a little, they're stacking animals.
Yeah.
I have a little ADD. Mm-hmm. So this has alligators and snakes and penguins, sheep. Sheep can't stack with anything. It's too soft and fuzzy.
All right. So this is from Rookie Moms. We're going to talk to the Rookie Moms pretty soon because they have a book coming out. But we've mentioned them before. They
isn't every mom at least once a Rookie Mom?
Yes. But these Rookie Moms have activities for Rookie Moms of every day. They have a new activity for your first year.
Was it hard being the... I don't remember this part. The first time harder than the second time?
I think for me, I can't really speak to that because I had 2 the second time around. There were some things that I was more flustered about. Yeah. You just don't, of course you're flustered when you're a first time mom.
Like you don't know what to do.
No idea. Yeah. But I felt flustered both times. So.
Yeah. Well, twins, that's flustering. You were a first mother of twins.
Yeah.
Rookie
that's
mother of
true.
Twins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to talk with them. I actually met Whitney in the park. She's one of the Rookie Moms.
Really?
We were in the park. And she came up to me and she said, "Are you Megan?"
She recognized
my kids from my Flickr photos.
Wow.
And it was funny because she said, "It's the first time that's ever happened."
I think it's the first time it's ever happened in the world.
That
she recognized you from your kids' Flickr page.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I know. So anyway, this one is one of her activities, embellishing a kid's shirt. I thought this was really cute. It's just, the materials are like just, I don't know. You just use like yarn and a needle basically. And
you could do it on a t-shirt or a hoodie or a onesie.
Yeah. And it was just a cool way to save on, getting designer baby clothes, which baby clothes can be so expensive.
Plus, there's some, it must be. I don't know. I wouldn't know, but there must be something satisfying in making something for your child to wear.
Yes.
I mean, or a gift. For years, moms did that.
Right.
We don't do it so much anymore. My mom still knits me sweaters.
She does.
You want to see? Here, she knit me this. Don't laugh.
That brown one?
Yeah.
It's nice. Why would I laugh?
Can you wear it?
I think I have. Yeah, that's... Oh, it's a vest. I like it.
Wait a minute. Wait till I'm wearing it.
Okay.
It's a little bit...
It's nice.
Really?
Yeah, I like it.
This is like... It's made of some sort of silk yarn.
I like
it.
It's
a little rustic.
Yeah, it is rustic.
It's got these beautiful wood buttons.
Yeah.
But no, I keep it here. I only wear it in private.
Yeah, Marco's mom knits. She knits a lot. She's a good knitter. All right, are we ready for the give?
What's this other piece of clothing? I never saw that. I'm sorry. Go
that
ahead.
That cape? What is that cape?
I have a cape in here. Oh, that's from my Superman costume.
Oh, okay. Moving on.
Yes.
This is Echo Edge or Echo Age. Echo Age, maybe?
A quadge.
A quadge. I found this interesting. This organization lets people pay online so that your child will only get one gift and the rest goes to charity. So this is for birthday parties.
Who gives them the gift?
So you go online,
yeah,
and you can pick out the invitation and everything, and it has all the details about the birthday party.
Oh, so you actually would echoage your party.
Right. And then it says what people do, what, you know, parents do who are invited, whose kids are invited. So you go online and you pay. And then, so instead of getting like tons of gifts, your kid only gets one gift. And I think I'm not sure, I think you choose the gift.
From the echoage page or?
That I'm not sure about. I think it must be like some kind of registry.
Guests are invited to an Echo Age birthday party online. Instead of bringing a wrapped and packaged present, guests simply RSVP and give a secure online gift of money. Payments are pooled for the purchase of one special gift and to support one meaningful cause. So you must choose from a list.
Right.
Of gifts.
Or maybe, yeah. I guess. I don't, it's interesting. I think I like that they're giving the extra money to charity. I think it's, I don't know that I'd be able to do it because it's like basically asking people for money, which is somehow different than just having a birthday party where people bring gifts.
Well, I think one thing is on a birthday present, you don't say, a birthday invitation, you don't say, please bring a present.
Right.
It's a voluntary thing.
Yeah.
It's, of course, everybody does. But
unless you say, please don't bring a present,
right.
Which people get offended when you say that,
too. And you still
have to
bring a present.
No,
you don't. Oh, believe me. Yes. If somebody says, don't bring a present, bring a present.
No.
They're lying.
No.
Everybody wants presents.
No.
No?
Well, you didn't bring a present to my kid's birthday party last year.
We brought books.
Right. Because that's why I felt like people want to bring something.
Yeah.
You know?
So you said, instead of a present, bring a book.
Yeah.
But that feels like a present.
Right.
But my point was that you don't write on the invitation, please bring us a gift.
Or please give us money. Or yeah.
And this is saying, please give us money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting idea. I thought I would mention it as an interesting idea.
It's Canadian.
But yeah, it's right. I put on Annabella's and Milo and Huck's birthday invitations, I've always put, please, no gifts. And you guys have always brought gifts.
Well, because we know that you will secretly resent it.
I will not resent it.
No. I don't ever want gifts at birthday, but I think adults shouldn't have gifts.
Mm-hmm. Well, where's my gift?
Happy birthday.
I don't know. It's touchy.
Yeah,
I think this
is your gift. Here, take
that tiki candle.
Here you go. A tiki mug.
This
is from Dr. Tiki.
Thank you. Well, that's re-gifting. No, you keep the tiki mug. I don't want a gift.
No, you're going to like this. It comes with the official
2006 calendar.
Lala 2006 calendar.
Is she naked?
No.
Oh.
She's just...
Is Lala a real person or not?
It's hard to tell from these pictures, actually. But she is. I've met her.
Oh, okay.
But these pictures are kind of modified, so they look like pinup pictures.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. That's very sweet. Yeah. You obviously put a lot of thought into that gift.
It's happy birthday to you. It's a real tiki mug. It says Tiki Bar on the back of it.
Oh. Super. All right. Let's talk about Audible.
Is it?
We're
going
to give a gift to you guys.
It's time for.
Let's give you guys a gift.
To mention our great sponsor, audible.com, AUDIBLE. Somebody sent me an email saying, I can't find audio.com. Audible, AUDIBLE.com. This is at this point, there's nobody else. It's the source of audiobooks. And certainly the online source of audiobooks. The best place to go. 45,000 titles. That's probably out of date. There's more all the time. The best books read, and this is important, by the best readers. So when you're listening to an Audible book, the reader disappears. And this is the thing that sometimes people say, oh, I couldn't listen to a book because it would be too hard. You know, I have to pay attention. But what happens when a book is well read, you don't realize you're listening to a book. It's the medium, and this happens in any good book, the medium disappears and you're just in the adventure. And Audible just brings it to life that way. I love these. And we do have a deal. If you go to audible.com/monkeys, you can sign up there and get a coupon for a free book. In fact, you've got one for us, right?
I do. This actually came from a listener, from Jim Cronin, and he has a good story that I'm going to read to you.
Okay.
He says that I have two Audible book suggestions for the show. My fifth grade daughter is in a book club at school. The language arts teacher picks a book every month, and if the kids want to read outside of school, they have a pizza party to discuss it.
Oh, it's a book club. That's
I
so
know.
Cool.
To help my daughter with comprehension and to make sure she didn't just say, I read two chapters, but actually did read them, I listened to the audiobook version on my daily commute.
Oh, so he's reading with her.
Yeah. The last two books have been absolutely fabulous. So good, I raced ahead and finished and then let my wife listen to them on her commute.
Oh, that's neat.
The books are Walk Two Moons by Sharon Creech. Have you read that?
I haven't
either. It's read by Hope Davis, who I love, the actress Hope Davis.
And oh.
Yeah, neat. You know, and the other book is The Tale of Despero by Kate DiCamillo.
Neat.
And that is read by Graham Malcolm, who does things on Broadway, apparently.
Yeah, a lot of times they're Broadway actors. I think their studios are in New York, so they get the best. That's why the readers are so good.
And that, I haven't read The Tale of Despero either, but I really am interested in that. It sounds like a great book for Annabella, so
really
I'm going to put that on my list.
Thanks,
and
Jim,
she
for the recommendations.
He says they're great readers. That's what he says, too. And I think that's really interesting I think that's a great idea for parents to listen on their commute, on extra time that they have, and then be able to discuss the books with their kids. I remember really well when my sister was reading A Separate Piece by John Knowles.
Oh, yeah.
I guess either in junior high or high school, and my dad read it along with her, and they discussed it. And I remember being really jealous that they were, like, discussing books.
Oh, isn't that neat?
I'm sure he did the same with me, but I can't really remember. I only remember when he read it with her.
we've found a little nugget here.
Yes, yes.
Paging Dr. Freud.
Okay. I think that's a great idea to listen. I'm definitely going to do that once my kids start getting assigned books.
What a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, so thanks, Jim.
And nowadays, kids' books are so good. John Knowles, that's not a new book. But
yeah.
I mean, they're just such great stuff.
So that's Walk Two Moons by Susan Creech and The Tale of Despero by Sharon DiCamillo. Camillo.
Audible.com/monkeys for your free book. We thank Audible so much for their support of Jumping Monkeys.
And now we are going to talk to archivist Allison, or archivist Allison. Allison has her BA and PhD at Columbia and has her information and library science degree from UCLA. She now works as an archivist and a records manager at Moore Rubel Udall Architects and Planners in Santa Monica. She's also a new mom and is an expert at combining this idea of archiving in a business sense with archiving our family memories, our photos, and our stuff. So she had two posts on Ask Moxie, a site that we interviewed Moxie a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be great to have her answer some of our questions about how to manage all of these memories and make them last.
Say hello to archivist Allison.
Welcome to Jumpy Monkeys. Thanks for coming. Why don't you start by telling us about
why you call yourself an archivist?
Well, archivist is a profession. We go to school to do this, but
really? You have a degree in archivology? Is it like library science? I mean, what would
yes.
You-
Yes, my degree is in MLIS. It's a library and information science with a concentration in archival studies. Yeah.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, I got it at UCLA. It's a good department. So my job on an ongoing basis is to help organizations. I do sort of both records management and archiving. So I help organizations with their active and inactive records maintenance use over the long and short terms.
Makes sense. So in the business sense, you'd be sending documents off to special places so they don't ever go away, and making sure that their hard drives are stored properly, things like that.
That's right. That's right. That's right. But I'm also a mom. And so I have been seeing how the things that, I mean, my daughter's very young, but as things go on, it's just sort of interested me how people can have very different approaches towards what they keep and what they throw away in their own personal life. And I deal with, of course, I deal with organizations, but organizations are, of course, made up of people. So I get to watch how they interact with their business information. And it's similar but different to the way people interact with their own private information.
So I can understand that, because I like to keep stuff, and my husband likes to throw things away. He would throw, he would throw away one of our children if I would let him.
There's just too many. We don't need, we've got duplicate boys. We don't need
right,
that extra.
Exactly. Twins are hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, so it's been a, when we, like, we like to clear out the toys every once in a while, and it's this, I get so anxious, and he gets anxious, and it's hard. How am I supposed to deal with that?
Yeah, it's very hard because we all have different approaches to what to keep and what to throw away. When you live in a household with people with differing opinions, it can cause a lot of stress. I think you know, one can exaggerate it or one can play it down. But as with everything, I think we're dealing with a case of cooperation and communication. I mean, that sounds sort of boring to say, but. If you both know that you have these differing approaches towards what you want to do with your belongings, then it's a lot easier to work with than somebody who thinks they like to save and actually they really like to throw everything away, and vice versa. Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's also the process of saving and how you save. I mean,
that's right.
I mean, most of our stuff goes from the refrigerator to a cardboard box to the trash eventually. And,
right.
And Jennifer, my wife, will kind of do some triage and say, oh, we will want to save this, or, oh, let's save this report card with all F's. It's so cute. You know, stuff like that. But we don't have any process.
Is there like a best way for people to do this?
I'm afraid absolutely not. There is absolutely no best way.
Pressure's off.
Because, I mean, what you just described, Leo, sounds like a perfectly orderly process, to be honest. It's on the fridge. You decide what to do with it after it leaves the fridge.
And we don't save everything, but we save some things.
That's right. And some people really like to save everything. And you know what? That's fine, too, especially if you live in a spacious manor where there's just tons and tons of space to put things. But one of the things that I think is sort of... there are two things that are always important to keep in mind. One is for both the digital and physical realm, and the other is mainly for the digital realm. But for both the physical and the digital realm, if you want to, like, say you have a whole bunch of stuff and you think to yourself, well, I could pare it down or I could just find a better way to store it. And these are actually two totally different ways to approach your stuff. One is like it's a way of keeping, you know, compact storage, making yourself more efficient. That's actually a drive towards keeping all your stuff.
Yeah.
If you really want to start paring it down, that's actually a drive towards purging your stuff. And people often think that if I could just be more creative with my storage, I'd find a way to reduce my holdings, and that causes trouble because that's not the same thing at all. So you just got to pick one and go with it. Or in your case, Megan, you know, compromise on something and go with it. find a more compact way to store things, and then over time, maybe get a little bit of stuff out the back end. You know,
do you in your science in the science library in information science, do you consider the future? I mean. A lot of times you save all this stuff, but nobody really thinks about, is anybody going to ever look at it?
Right. Absolutely. In fact, in the profession, one of the things that we're, required is the wrong word, but I'll use it like it's true. We are required to deal with the mandates of our user base. That is to say, what it is that they feel is important about their information, both now and later. And families have mandates too, right? Like, we like to keep all our stuff. And if that's the family mandate, then you keep all your stuff. If you, we like to live as frugally and as pared down as possible. Well, that's your family mandate. And you have to make sure that you decide to go with the flow. Because if you try to buck that and say, we like to keep everything, but not our children's stuff, that's going to cause stress and probably anxiety. And we don't want therapy. We want lovely, happy life.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think, you know, I think about photographs this way. I take a lot of photos. I save some, but I say most, but I delete the really awful ones. I should delete more of them. But then I also think, gosh,
well,
you know, here
why?
We are. Well, you're right. They don't take up much room.
Right. You're talking about digital photos.
Yeah.
Right?
And so there's kind of a natural archival system for digital anything as opposed to paper. But I think, you know, here we are shooting video, taking photos like crazy. And, you know, are future generations or even our kids really going to look at these ever again? Or is this just kind of a silly vanity?
Well, somebody, when things get saved, somebody usually looks at them. Some one person will look at it. Your kids will look at them.
Yeah.
Their kids will look. They'll want to know, you know, your kids' kids will want to know, you know, silly Grandpa Leo. He was always doing this.
It's true. If I could see my grandfather on video or my great great or my great great or my great great, it would be really neat to be able to see all of that stuff.
Right. And that leads me actually back to the second thing, which is that there's a big difference in the digital world between backup and archiving.
Oh,
because backup, I only bring this up because it makes people go, oh, backup is like an ongoing thing. I think I heard you say on another podcast, you use Jungle Disk, Leo, right?
I do. Yeah.
Jungle Disk is a great, I mean, it's a fine backup system and I heard it worked really well for you and that's wonderful. But backups are taking the state of your machine or your holdings at one particular period of time so that you can go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And archives is a little bit different. What it is that you actually making proactive decisions, hopefully picking the things that you really want to last on an ongoing basis into the future. Okay?
So I'm not doing that. I'm just kind of saving everything.
Right. And that's cool. You can go with that, but
well, somebody's going to have to go through it at some point.
Exactly, and sometimes for some families, that ends up being a burden that gets passed down through generations.
That's where the attic is the burden for a lot of families.
Exactly, yeah. And there are digital attics galore out there. I mean, just galore.
So how should we? So let's say I want to preserve. Okay, I'll accept the fact that maybe my kids or grandkids will want to see video and pictures from this era. What would be the, and there are a couple of issues. One is, how do you store it so that they can? If I put it on zip disks, I'm out of luck.
That's right.
So there's problem one. There's the physical storage. Uh-huh. But also, how do I organize them? How do I present them so it's useful to them?
Right. Well, the first one is easy and hard all at the same time. Digital media fails. Digital media also evolves. And so say you had a whole bunch of zip disks and you no longer have a zip drive. Well, you are probably entirely out of luck. There's probably somewhere, somebody somewhere has one and they can charge you whatever they want to get that off there for you. So I'm afraid on the one hand, you kind of have to watch these things. And if you see things going the way of the dodo, you better migrate to a new type of hardware that will be more that is more active for the moment. But once you've done that, you're still not done because then you have to watch that particular format and make sure that it moves on. And so that's the one thing. The other thing is that, of course, each individual disc, say you choose DVDs, DVDs last only for a certain amount of time, and hard drives only last for a certain amount of time. The physical drive is what I'm talking about. So you also have to make sure that the actual item you stored your things on is good, which means you have to go back and check on them from time to time, every couple years probably. And while you're there, make sure that, you know, the medium you chose isn't going out of style.
Right. The good news is that bits are pretty easy to copy and re-archive.
That's right. And you may lose some metadata. I mean, there are people, for instance, who have big photo albums in Picasso or whatever, and they put comments on all their photos, which is awesome. They should totally do that. Well, when they move to the new system, they should check to make sure that all this other hard work they put into their albums can move on. And it sounds daunting, and I suppose it is, but this, to me, and this is just theoretical, it's kind of the price we pay for it being so quote-unquote cheap. Digital stuff has this reputation for being very, very cheap. You know, you just take all you need is a compact flash card, take 1,000 pictures. They're all free. Yes, sort of. But I think that part of the price we pay is that you have to really pay attention to them and tend to them like little weak flowers as you go forward.
My kids feel that way. They say, why do you take so many pictures? Stop it. you delete your pictures. You've got 6,000 pictures from this 6 months period and you got to go.
Right.
So how should we present them then to make it useful for them as they get older?
Right. Well, in which case, if you are talking about making an archives, you'll probably, I mean, you have a very technically oriented family, I bet, Leo.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily need to go out and buy some fancy presentation solution. You could just save the files for them and make sure that they're safe.
That's probably the best thing, because PowerPoint may not be here in 20 years.
Oh, no. I would save the files, the original ones you took, if possible, and just kind of in a brute manner. Now, not all of us, I mean, this is a show that is you know, a little more technically oriented, so the audience will almost certainly have relatively technically oriented families. And that's just the safest way. Save the original files, make sure they're safe, make sure they're sound, because in 50 years, you have no idea what they're going to use.
But save them how? Like, because you were talking about DVD. I mean, save them on a DVD, because that's
only as long as DVD's around.
Right.
You can save them on whatever makes you comfortable. Me personally and professionally, to be honest, I prefer hard drives for the following reason. One, well, it's mainly because it's not annoying to check on your files. Right. If you save things on CDs, you're plopping in CDs for hours if you want to check to make sure that they're all right. Mm-hmm. If you just have an external hard drive that has all of your archives on it, and it should be different than your main hard drive, and it should definitely be different than your backup hard drive. You can check in on it every once in a while. Is everything okay? Is everything there? Are there hard drives that are better? It's just easier to check in on your stuff.
Why should it be different than your backup drive?
Because backup drives get bloated, and backup drives, I'm thinking actually kind of particularly of Apple's new time capsule solution, which I think is, you know, perfectly fine.
But everything's on there. It's all
exactly.
Yeah. So and that's a good idea. So buy a hard drive, big one, write on it, archives, and then judiciously copy the stuff that you, original files of the stuff you know you're going to want.
That's right. And if you have the time, you can certainly make then a DVD or CD copy of that from time, you know, snapshots of that and send them to your sister or send them to your mother or send them to somewhere, just so they're somewhere else.
I made a video of our Christmas visit, and I knew that if I just kept my copy, so I gave it to my mom and I gave it to my sister. I figured it's more likely to survive the generations
that way. That's true. You know? That's right. And, you know, your house burns down. You know, your paper and your hard drive is going to go up in smoke. I hate to say such horrible things, but it's true.
Well, I always think about the stuff that's lasted in history is like papyrus.
Yes, right.
Printed stuff actually lasts longer than stuff on a digital medium.
Well, it does. It does. As I've written elsewhere, it's funny the way that works. The way you keep things on physical documents for the longest period of time is usually, and this isn't always true, but it's 99% of the time, if you could put it in the coldest, darkest, most humidity-controlled environment that you can find, and you never look at them, touch on them, see them, use them ever again, they're going to last for a really long period
but
of time.
Put them under
exactly. Put them in the bottom of a pyramid.
Right.
Leave them a couple thousand years.
Great.
They're going to be fine. And digital stuff is just the inverse. You need to look at them, touch them, make sure they're still there, make sure that they're still whole, sound. And so, like I say, it's just a question of where the work goes in. Paper, on the one hand, is expensive to make originally, especially back in the days of papyrus. You know, getting that stuff dried, getting it all made. A lot of the effort went into the front end, and you had a little bit less effort in the back end, provided you had a proper environment. Digital's the other way around.
This was on my mind because we were just in Egypt in January, and it's remarkable to see things that were that are 5,000 years old and preserve the essence of that time over so many generations. And I think then about my stuff. You know, and I don't know what that hard drive is going to look like. But on the hard drive, that's interesting because the only thing that has to really, survive is the interface to the hard drive. So as long as, for instance, USB is around, and that's probably going to last a lot longer than hard drive mechanisms, you could still read it. And then of course, file systems might go away. This is the kind of thing you think about all the time, isn't it?
It is. Welcome to my job, Leo.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, I'm just a big old geek, but I just think this is fascinating. And it is important for families because this is your history, your family history. Think of how genealogy would change.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, it is changing.
Yeah.
Well, I think about my grandfather died in November and we were going through his house and look, you know, I found just, you know, maybe pictures of before he was born, you know, and it was amazing. It was amazing, one, because like there's only maybe one picture from every 4 or 5 years. And so it's manageable. Yes. I can't imagine like seeing a hard drive and saying, okay, let's plug this and see what's on it, you know, and looking through these 1,000 files. I mean, will people actually do that? I mean,
I mean, this is a generational thing. I mean, think about the way your kids interact with digital media now. I mean, So 20th century dad, and you know, just the things that are that to us seem like information overload are not so much for the generation following. And this is coming from a person, me myself, who never had to handwrite a paper. I mean, I'm probably the first generation of people that just started with computers and never looked back. Mm-hmm. So there's no saying what the future generations will do, and it isn't really for us to guess. We need to just make sure we keep the things we would want them to have. And to just think about it, it doesn't take much. You know, I'm not asking, the profession isn't asking people to, you know, sit there and write a family motto. This is the way we keep our stuff. But give it a little thought. Make sure that you're not just putting it on a CD and sticking it on a shelf, because that's a paper-based way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And go on with your life.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I was talking to my husband. I was saying, like, lamenting the fact that I haven't even finished our wedding album. I haven't done any baby books for the kids. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, look at your blog. You've been doing it since you were pregnant. You've written, you know, since 2001.
Right.
You, it's a narrative. It's not just pictures. Uh-huh. You've archived more than most people. And I'm like, it's so true. I just don't look at it that way. I look at all these people who've, like, scrapbooked little, you know, glitter into their baby photo, and I get jealous and feel bad about myself.
But you've done much more. That raises an interesting question. What do we do about our websites? A lot of information is there. How do we archive those?
Yeah. Again, welcome to my job. Yes, websites are really tough because really on an ongoing basis, the way that the internet is shaping up, it's really hard to take snapshots of data. And that's kind of the way we've all been used to thinking about saving things. There's a Word document and it gets saved and you can save that Word document. But take Amazon.com, for example. Say you were going to try to somehow archive Amazon.com. Well, when? Whose point of view? Every time somebody looks at Amazon.com, it's different for them because they know the user and they pitch the ads to that particular user. And Amazon.com isn't one thing.
It's a program. It's not It's not a static page. It's a program.
Exactly. Same with blogs. Same with blogs to a lesser extent. If you were really trying to see what jumpingmonkeys.com looked like at a particular period of time, you'd need the ads. You'd need the this.
Right.
You'd need the that.
Right.
So we have to kind of pick and choose, I'm afraid, about websites right now, what we want to keep and what we want to discard. It's a process of deciding what to keep and what to throw away, like everything
else. You're doing snapshots, really, of a period in time, and you can't do it all.
That's right.
What Brewster Kahle's doing at archives.org is snapshotting the web, but it's a very difficult, very challenging thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's hard when you think what you're doing is making an archive, a complete version of something,
and you're not.
Yeah. That's just important to know the difference.
And if you, it's one thing if you have, like, Jumping Monkeys, you have that locally, it's in Typepad, it's on your site,
mm-hmm.
or if you're doing it on Vox, where you don't really even control the engine that it's running
on. That's right. And that's the case with all digital things. I mean, when it comes right down to it, you need to know the encoding. You need to know the machine it was running on. You need to know everything about it in order to reconstruct the data. Just a string of ones and zeros is going to do you no good without a whole bunch of other information.
Right.
So in the case of a blog, you know, text files are great. You know, text files are a good thing. But text and images and this and that and the other all coming together make it a tricky proposition.
Right. Mm-hmm. You might have to dumb it down a little bit.
You may archive
it. For instance, just saving the texts of your posts with the images on that hard drive might be the thing to do. At least you'd have the text and you'd have the images.
Yep. Or local HTML. If you can dumb it down to a plain old series of HTML files, you can make your own little mini home-based web server of what the blog looked like at a particular... But, you know, this is for... I'm talking to Megan and Leo. This is the high-end audience. Not everybody is going to know how to do that. And there should be solutions out there, but I don't think there really are right now.
Yeah, they're really not good ones. RSS is helping because that does give you an output that is kind of machine-readable and standardized. Mm-hmm. So saving the RSS output might not be a bad way to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Yeah.
So long as you have that standard available, it's absolutely true.
Right. Well, I see, you know, 5,000 years from now, will the Egyptologists of the future be looking for the Rosetta Stone? What is this HTML they keep talking about?
Exactly.
I don't understand. What does bracket B bracket mean?
It could very well be the case. I mean, HTML is a pretty well-published standard, but not everybody, out of the web world.
Right. I'm sure cuneiform was at the time as well.
Exactly.
I don't know what it, I don't. I'm sure it's a really interesting thing to think about. And I do think that generations from now, 20 generations ahead, they're going to have such a, I hope, such a wealth of information about us. Mm-hmm. The kinds of things I think we would love to have. Imagine if you could read Abraham Lincoln's blog and how fascinating that would be.
Right.
Yep. There is a danger, of course, in saving everything as well. I know that the guys and gals at Google will probably disagree with me, but from my professional point of view, saving everything, like literally everything, trying to save everything, is about as functionally useful as throwing everything away because
too
of
much.
The... too much information. Over, how are you going to find that one thing you were looking for in this sea? And again, the people who think that machine algorithms will cure all will disagree with me. But for the time being, we're just ordinary, average, early 20th century people. We need a way to find our things. And if you say, if you have too much stuff, like every single word you ever produced or thought you ever made digital, it can be very difficult to find that one picture of Aunt Mildred.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, you know, I think it's already, you're already being proven correct, Allison, because even Google can't keep up with the web. They've only got about 25% of everything that's there.
Yeah.
It's just going too fast.
It is.
Very interesting.
Well, thank you so much. Unlike any guest we've ever had on the show, you do not have a website to push or any product to push.
Allison.
You've got nothing.
No, I got nothing.
When are you going to get a blog? How old's your child?
She's 9 months old.
Oh, no wonder you don't have time.
No, I don't. To be honest, my husband is all, Allison, you should blog. Allison, you should blog. But I'm just honored to be able to share my knowledge with folks like you.
Well, we'll save this and make sure generations to come know about archivist Allison.
Thank you, Leo. Thank you very much.
They'll be listening to this going, I have no idea what they're talking about. This HTML, I don't get it.
It's always in the digital realm when you try to sound all smart in the now and 10 years later, you sound like a total moron.
Isn't it funny?
There's no way around it.
Yeah, but you're in this business. I think that's just fascinating. Really neat.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you very much, Leo.
Really appreciate it for your time.
No problem.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks, Megan. Bye.
Thank you.
And now we don't have anywhere to send them. They just have to...
Well, we can send them to Ask Moxie, where she has two posts. It's similar to what she was
nice, long
talking
posts,
about. Yeah. And we talked to Moxie a few months ago, and that's how I heard about Allison. And so...
I guess Moxie wrote a little bit about keeping your family stuff, and Allison wrote in and said, here's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, she's got a lot of energy, and she's smart, and she knows this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see. My grandmother was a librarian.
Oh.
I come from a line of librarians. You know, Patrick Norton also.
Yes.
Line of librarians and teachers. And
his grandmother was a librarian? Or his wife is a librarian?
Well, his wife is now. And that's what's so interesting is what library science has become is very different from what it was.
Right?
It's not about the Dewey Decimal System anymore or checking books in and out. It's about information. And it's a challenging time. And I think a wonderful field to be in right now. You know, I was talking to the librarian at Yale University the other day, and she said, well, do you think of librarians, you know, like Marion the librarian and, you know, kind of quiet. And I said, no, I don't. I mean, that may be the old view of librarians, but now you guys are on the front lines, as we can see with Allison.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, shall we, let's see, what's next? Do we want to do movie pick, or do you have, I don't know, what do you got for me? Let me see here, I'm going to look at the list. Here it is, the YouTube video of the week.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
Oh, this is so funny.
Have you seen this?
Didn't we do this already?
No, did you do it on another one of your shows?
You know what, you sent it to me.
I might have.
Yeah, you sent me this, and I just couldn't, it was so funny.
This is Star Wars according to a 3-year-old girl. Which is pretty funny.
And pretty accurate.
Yeah.
She's got actually a very good sense of it. Mm-hmm. Star Wars, Episode 4, according to a 3-year-old girl.
Well, okay. The sound people capture robots and drive and sell them in a garage sale. Kind of like garage sale, but except they're selling robots. And no one's gonna buy R2 and the shiny guy. The shiny guy always worries. Luke's gonna buy those.
The shiny guy always worries.
Kenobi's kind of a teacher. He's keep saying Luke how to learn how to do his little light-up sword. He has to try to block the little Pokeball. He tried to do it without seeing. Obi Kenobi sometimes moves things around. Sometimes he disappears. Princess Leia got out of jail and out of the spaceship. And they got the big thing that blowed up stuff. We blowed it up together. It blowed up Princess Leia's planet.
Oh.
But don't talk back to Darth Vader. He'll get ya. It's an exciting movie.
But don't talk back to Darth Vader.
He'll get ya.
He'll get ya.
That just had me cracking up. And made me wonder, is she watching Star Wars that many times? Or
she
just
had it memorized.
Yeah. Because Annabella has never seen Star Wars. My nephews have. And they talked to her about it. And she had two friends over today. And she was like, I love Star Wars. But I only get to be Princess Leia because there's only one girl. And my cousins get to be whoever they want because there's so many boys.
Yeah, that's true.
But she hasn't even seen the movie. So it's possible this little girl hasn't even seen the movie. Kids just talk about it so much.
Do you think it's too scary for a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
There's that snake trash compactor. That's terrifying.
There's an age at which you're like pre-scared.
Yeah. I think I mentioned this before. My daughter watched The Wizard of Oz until she was about 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got scary for
her.
She was terrified.
Yeah.
She loved it. But the flying monkeys. And now that I think about it, I can't believe we showed her that.
I know.
But you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know how they're going to react. I think maybe I should find some small children and show them Star Wars. Yeah. We'll do a little experiment.
I think that's pretty funny. We'll put that link on the show notes.
So cute. Oh, my gosh.
And now it's time for some listener feedback. Should I read an email first, and then we'll try our
And once again, as usual, I'm so ill-prepared, I haven't actually gone through the...
That's fine.
I think it's kind of fun. So far, we haven't been bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is an email from David from Panama City, Florida. He said, I thought I would drop you a quick message to expand on your recent conversations with Leo regarding Winnie the Pooh. I'm guessing that many of your other Canadian listeners have also sent you similar messages. I did get several of these similar messages. While Winnie the Pooh stories were certainly inspired by his own son, Christopher Robin, and his teddy bear, Winnie the Pooh, the backstory behind the naming of the teddy bear is worth mentioning. So we didn't get anything wrong.
Winston Churchill, isn't it?
During World War II, troops from Winnipeg were being transported to eastern Canada in order to board ships to Europe so they could join the brigade.
Yeah.
When the train stopped at White River, Ontario, a lieutenant called Harry Colborne bought a small female black bear cub for $20 from a hunter who had killed its mother
and brought the bear on board. This story,
Her name is Winnipeg, after his hometown of Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Winnie quickly became the mascot of the brigade and even went to Britain with the unit. When the brigade was posted to the battlefields of France, Lieutenant Colborne took Winnie to the London Zoo for a long loan and later formally presented the London Zoo with Winnie in December 1919.
So there was an actual Winnie.
Yes, where it became a popular attraction. Winnie was a favorite of Christopher Robin when he visited the zoo with his father. The story goes that he even spent time in the cage with Winnie. Dangerous. This led to the naming of his own teddy bear, Winnie. So,
there you go.
Yeah. Thank you, David,
so
and
the
others.
Canadian connection, as usual.
As usual.
Yeah, I do have one here. Shall we play it? It's 2 minutes long. But I might have to cut this down.
Mm-hmm.
This person might be ranting.
I hope so. I'm in the mood for a rant.
Hi, Leo and Megan. This is Edie, and I've called in a couple times before, and I'll try to be a little more focused this time. I don't do blow and drive it. I wanted to let you know, in podcast number 34, I think it was, you talked about the Target specials and the perimeter perusing. And I was waiting to get caught up on my podcast, but it doesn't seem like anybody else called in about it. That's where all the clearances are at Target. So all the main clearances are on the end caps facing the outer wall of the whole store. So if you go into any Target and just immediately go to the outer wall after you pass the restaurant or whatever's first there and walk around, then you'll hit most of the clearance racks. Once in a while, when they have a little bit too much, they start having them down the aisles. But that's where you get all the best deals, is on the perimeter.
Oh, well, that was good. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
She goes on for another minute and a half. Should I play some more?
Sure.
I mean, I think we got the gist of it.
Maybe she has something else to say.
Also, just a couple quick things. I just listened to number 36, and you were talking about names, and I think that would be fun to do a little bit more on names.
What were we talking about, baby names?
I think we were talking about Cory Doctorow's baby
name. Oh, that name. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just one person that had eight names.
We should do a baby name story.
We should.
Baby name episode.
All right. All right. Here's another one.
My son's name is Power.
Power.
P-O-W-E-R.
Wow.
And it's actually a surname. Oops, sorry about my navigation there.
I like that. I think Power is a good name.
Yeah.
I think that's a powerful name.
Mm-hmm. It's a surname in our family, and that's what it's after. But
we have a surname in our family, Peyton.
Mm.
And Abby's middle name is Peyton, but I thought that might be a great... I actually... had a college roommate named Peyton, a man. It's a great name.
That is a good name.
You know, we get a lot of questions about that, of course. And then also you were talking about homework. And my kids are homeschooled, so obviously everything is homework. But there was a semester that my son went to public school in first grade, and he brought home homework. And I'm like, what did he do for 6 hours?
Yeah, exactly. That's always my question. It feels like the teachers... are palming their the education off on us.
Yeah.
You know, I just did not see the point to it. That I agree that parents need to be involved in stuff, but why keep them so long if they're going to have to do more school at home?
Right.
So maybe make shorter days or something. I don't know if they insist on homework. But I think that's one way that they try to get parents to be involved with kids, and I think that there's a lot better ways. Parents be involved, but that's
yeah, because the parents hate the kids by the time they've done 3 hours of homework.
My opinion. Anyway, I still love the podcast I have ever since I very first started listening, and I love the different types of guests that you have on there. And I just want to say too that you guys have great voices for this. Your voices are just really nice to listen to.
Oh,
you know, some people their voices kind of. We kind of answer a little bit. You guys have really good voices for the work that you do, so keep up the good work. And we'll talk to you later.
Well, I'm glad we played that one to the end.
Yeah. Thank you, Dee Dee. We really didn't listen to that first. Promise.
That was well worth going to the end of that one.
Yeah. All right. So I have an email from Jessica from Brooklyn. She says, this has nothing to do with parenting, but I thought you'd find it amusing. On one show, Leo mentioned that if Samuel Pepsis were alive today.
Peeps.
I knew I'd pronounce that wrong. Pepsis.
I never knew how to pronounce
Peeps.
It. I may still be saying it wrong, actually.
Peeps were alive today. He would have a blog instead of a diary. Well, he does. All of his diary entries have been translated into blog form at peepysdiary.com. There's even an RSS feed, so you can, for example, add him as a friend on LiveJournal, you know, if you were a ginormous nerd.
You know, I remember when they started doing this, they were actually putting it day by day, they were putting up his posts as if it were a blog. And it's just so great. You can actually go to today's post and see, like, for instance... we're recording this. Let's see. This is the 15th. Let's see. Oh, he didn't write anything on March 15th, it looks like. His last post. See, this is like a typical blogger. He hasn't posted all week. Up betimes, this being the first morning of my promise upon a forfeit not to lie in bed a quarter of an hour after my first waking. Abroad to St. James's, and there much business. The king also being with us a great while. Thence to the change, and thence with Captain Taylor and Sir W. Warren dined at a house hard by for discourse sake, and so I home.
It's,
you know, what's nice is they've hyperlinked.
Oh, yeah. That is
so
perfect.
when you say he went to the change, it has a hyperlink which explains what the change is the Royal Exchange. And they even have a map, a Google map of it. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that goes along with our discussion with Allison earlier. Because
we also
know
what temperature it was.
Would we have been able to keep his blog if he actually had?
Yeah, it? Yeah. He was writing it in a pen and paper and ink.
Yeah, I have two more suggestions from Denise Howell.
The wonderful Denise Howell.
Yes. Who I get so many emails to people who really appreciate having her on.
We should have her back.
We should. But here's some of her suggestions. She says this first might be from the duh, how obvious department, but it's Goodwill. And it satisfies spend, save, and give. You can get the kids involved in picking stuff out to donate it and dropping it off. Yes. Then if there's a Goodwill resale store attached, you can go in and do spending and saving parts.
Good point.
You have to get lucky and have a little determination to find the treasures. But today we found this $20 fishing toy in mint new condition for $1.99.
Oh, that's really neat.
So she says, I kind of have mixed feelings about associating the giving part so immediately with the getting something new and fun to bring on home. But in balance, I think it makes the giving experience a positive one and reinforces that recycled things are just as cool as new.
It's about the circle of life. I think that's fine. Yeah. You know, we have in this town, I bet you this is true in many cases, we not only have Goodwill, but other charitable organizations have their own little stores. So there's Saks Thrift Avenue.
Right.
And across the street from it, there's, I think it's Alphabet. What is it called? Alphabet City?
Alphabet Soup, I think. Soup. Yeah.
And that's the Petaluma Educational Foundation. Mm-hmm. So you can go shopping and like within a block, there's right. three stores.
Yeah.
That all of them are charitable and you can, of course, donate to as well.
Right. Yeah. And I know, yeah, the one in our town, I know the shelter in town gives people
Saks is for cots,
right? Yeah. And they give them like a little vouchers to go in and buy things there, clothes and stuff. Because I know some people have feelings about Goodwill, like how much money goes to the corporation and how much
you
know.
Feelings. So you know what, it's fine. I think that's fine. Goodwill is like Salvation Army. It's one of those places where they're doing great work, and I don't mind at all.
Exactly.
You know? And how much are you spending?
Right.
Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we give all of our used stuff to Goodwill, although. Getting the kids involved is a double-edged sword when they get to be a teenager. Jennifer will put bags of stuff together.
Uh-huh.
And if Abby finds those bags, she'll go through and pull stuff out.
Oh, yeah. Not just teenagers do that. I can assure
Everybody
you,
does.
Young kids
yeah.
also really yeah. do that.
And
that toy I never played
exactly.
with, ever, I want to play with it right now.
Frequently, the indignation of, you're getting rid of this? Well, I love this.
Well, that's what I do with Marco, too, so.
He's a GRO guy.
He throws away good things, you
He's
know.
He's a GRO guy.
What GRO?
Get rid of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish I were a GRO guy.
You know, one of my good friends is also, she, along with Marco, like they love to purge things. She has, in the past, picked up a gift at the post office that was mailed to her, you know, that she didn't get on her front step. She had to go to the office, opened it up, decided she didn't want it for her kid, and brought it to Goodwill, like without even going home.
That's hardcore.
Just like, we don't need this. Here it is at Goodwill.
I'll
and you know what she also does? She throws away so much stuff. She throws away the Netflix envelopes. Like, you know, she goes overboard. Like,
she just wants,
here's trash, the things that you have to use to send back the thing.
Well, you heard what happened to David Pogue.
No.
Was it David Pogue? Oh, no, Stephen Levy, the
he
columnist
He threw away
at the
one
New York,
of his kids?
At Newsweek.
Uh-huh.
He had a MacBook Air loaner from Apple.
He threw it away?
No, he didn't. His wife did. He believes that what happened was he left it on the coffee table with the Sunday Times. It's so thin and light, she just jammed it all together and recycled it all. He thinks
Some
that
dumpster diver got really lucky.
Whoa, there's a MacBook Air in here. I think the other issue that I would like to address, it's not merely the getting rid of, it's not getting it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We get too much stuff.
That's true.
And what really frosts me is when I'm bringing something to Goodwill that we bought that we never used or we used very lightly that was very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I feel terrible then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we do one more from the...
let's do one more.
From Northridge, California.
Hey Leo, hey Megan, this is David in Northridge, California. Just want to tell both of you I love the show, and Leo, I love the way you do your tentacle shows, and I love the way you spin things off with Megan, thanks to Megan, to put a little family thing on there, because I know with technology, like you were talking about on the last show, is that, you know, we're trying to mix technology with children, and you can't say, oh, we did it like that when we were 13 or 14, we used to go outside and play football. You know, now some of the kids do that, but they're mostly online. And even though, Leo, you do all the technical stuff, Megan adds that little special touch with his family and younger kids and babies. And, Leo, you bring your teenagers in. And just want to say thank you for putting a little personal touch and family touch in your show. And you guys are doing great work, and I hope to hear from you more. Bye, Leo. Bye, Megan. Thanks for the show. Bye-bye.
What a nice call. I think that's so sweet.
That's really great.
What a nice way to wrap this up. If you want to call us... That's our Grand Central number, 707. Grand Central is a Google service, by the way. I don't know if people know when I say that.
It's not actually a phone we have set up in Grand Central Station in New York.
Well, that would be cool. Leave a message for Megan and Leo at the Toad. No, you call it up, you get Megan on there, and she says, you know, leave us a message. If you leave a message, we may use it on the show. It's 707-981-4602. It is not toll-free. It's a long-distance call to Petaluma, California, 707-981-4502. But it's a really nice to hear your voices. We love it that you listen to the show.
Yeah, and I wanted to thank Allison Langmead for coming on the show and really making me feel better about all of the many pictures and stuff that I collect and take. And
play this episode for Marco.
I will.
Marco!
And next week we're going to talk to Susan Ettlinger, who writes at the Family Room blog, and she's going to talk a little bit about autism and the autism spectrum.
Excellent. So nice to see you, Megan. Welcome back from Tahoe. Hope you had a great time.
Oh, I did.
Did you ski?
Oh, yeah, I skied.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
I did, yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. Hey, we'll see you next time
on Jumping Monkeys.